Kids.
Oh, kids, what can you do? I am perspiring. I really am. I'm perspiring. I'm so excited. I haven't talked to Dr. Robert Cialdini one-on-one since we were both like strange fish out of water at a Google event with Guy Kawasaki. And there was all kinds of food around. And there was such a weird mix of people. Olympic skater Christy Yamaguchi and all kinds of people like that. But oh my gosh, I was just like, there he is across the room. And I tried my best to be as cool as I could, but I probably didn't succeed. But
welcome to the Backpack Show, where Chris Brogan name drops for 30 straight minutes. Dr.
Robert Cialdini is what I'm saying. And there's a new version of the book Influence out, which is crazy. This is the book. You know, this man wrote the book on influence and also persuasion and all kinds of other work. But we're back again. Once again, back gets the incredible. It's a great opportunity. So we're going to talk marketing for, I think, the first time on this show. Well, probably not really, but first-ish. We're going to talk marketing, Carrie, with Dr.
We're going to talk persuasion and how to get people to say yes.
That's right. And have we got some yeses for you tonight? Crypto coin stuff again.
Welcome to the Backpack Show with your hosts, Chris Brogan and Carrie Gargone. Boom shakalaka.
I totally forgot we had that whole other start that we could have done. Hey, Lucas. Oh, wow. There's Nancy Harhut
knows a thing or two about persuasion, so this will be fun.
This will be a great meeting. If Dr. Cialdini doesn't know yet, Nancy, he must. It's going to be a great interaction. I never
She's
even thought of that.
Brilliant.
Super, super, excited. Super smart. So the book Influence is out again. And this is grand. There's new expansion on it, new research brought to it. We have so much to do about it. I'm bringing it up on my little screen so I can show a little picture of the cover. Not like you've never seen the cover, by
the way.
There's
extended research and scholarship. There's a new seventh universal principle of influence. There's
right.
So much good stuff packed into the new
version. I mean, I don't know how the universe can actually expand to accept a seventh principle. I thought it was like
pretty locked down. Nobody understood it when NASA said there was another sign in the zodiac, but you know, we all just had to accept it.
I guess we had to accept it. We have California's leading trial attorney, Mitch Jackson, here. This is a big show today. Hiya, Paul, by the way. Hey, Jane, good to see everybody. Let's grab Dr. Cialdini and let's dig right in, shall we?
Yes.
Hello and welcome to the Backpack Show, good sir.
Well, thank you, Chris, and hello, Carrie, to you as well.
Thank you so much for joining us. Chris has been gushing about you. I mean, like, all day long.
It's been crazy. It's been crazy. Can't. What is Chip's question? What is the move to 7 p.m. permanent or at least indefinite? Nothing's permanent. There's no permanence in this universe. That's
Chris
a terrible
has done,
question.
This is the third iteration of this show, at least, that Chris has done since a year ago. So if that gives you any indication of how permanent anything is.
There's nothing permanent. I've been divorced. You know, who's going to say anything about that? Dr. Cialdini, let's start with the obvious. What is number 7? I mean, or do you want to make that
You're
the reason
save
why
that.
People buy the book? Is that the hit?
No, I think it makes sense to talk about what's new about this new and expanded edition. And one of the major features is this new universal principle of influence that I'm calling unity. As a communicator, could be a marketer, but could be any kind of communicator, if you can arrange for your audience to see you as one of them, not just similar to them, not just like them, but of them, right? That you share an identity, you share a membership in a group that helps you define yourself, everything becomes easier inside the influence process. People like you more, people trust you more, people believe you more, people want to cooperate with you more, and people say yes to you more as a result. So I'll give you an example. Sure. So there was a study done on a college campus. Researchers had a young woman who was a college age, a young woman, and had her stand on a heavily trafficked spot on campus, asking students who were walking by to donate to a to the United Way, right? And she was getting some kind of response, but nothing terrific, until she added one sentence to her request, right? It was, "I'm a student here too." In other words, she said, "I'm of you. I'm one of you. I don't remember what the university was. Maybe, you know, but I'm a Spartan, or I'm a Bruin, or I'm a Sun Devil, or I'm a Blue Devil, or whatever it is." Now they favored her, and they wanted to advance her outcomes in the situation. And I'll tell you, something recently happened to me that was similar to this, because what these we groups are that you identify yourself with can be a variety of them. A few months ago, I was reading a newspaper article about celebrities who had favorite NFL football teams. Well, I grew up in Wisconsin, where the home team has always been the Green Bay Packers. And I learned that Justin Timberlake and Lil Wayne were both avid Packer fans. I immediately thought better of their music.
Wow.
And I wish them greater success in the future. Right? So this is what you get when you can arrange for people to see themselves as with you in part of what we call a we group, right? People just are willing to bring down all the barriers to influence as a result.
Dr. Cialdini, the difference or the distance between that realization, wait a minute, Lil Wayne's not so bad, to your profession. What do you like rush to find a pen and jot that down and then bring it back to the lab? Like, what do you do in this process to then make all this new influence information available for your books and for your courses and everything you do?
No, this is a really a good question, because a lot of times I register something inside of me that is noteworthy about how I just reacted that I thought might be more general to people than just me. In fact, that's how I got started on studying the influence process in the first place. All my life, I've been an easy mark to the pitches of various salespeople or fundraisers who've come to my door, and I would find myself in unwanted possession of these things I didn't really want after having contributed to causes I had never heard about. And I remember thinking to myself, wait a minute, what just happened here? Because there must have been something other than the merits of the offer that got me to say yes to it. It must have been the psychology of the way the offer was presented to me. It must have been the delivery system that swept me toward yes. Isn't that interesting? That would be something that I should study, not just out of self-defense, right? But because a lot of people would be interested in knowing about the psychology of the influence process and what factors spurred people toward assent with various kinds of requests or proposals or recommendations they received.
And it works on you even though you've studied it for decades, right? The science of persuasion. And it's still like, how do I end up with all this stuff?
Right. It still works on me. But, you know, it's not something I automatically resist, because it seems to me that I've identified 7 universal principles of influence. Besides unity, there are things like authority and social proof and scarcity. These are the things that have always caused us to make good choices, right? Following the lead of legitimate authorities, recognizing that if a lot of people around me, like me, are doing something, you know, raving about a new restaurant or a new piece of software, it's probably good for me too. That if some attractive opportunity is rare or scarce or dwindling in availability, I should get off the fence and move. Those usually steer me correctly. And so I continue to be moved by those things. The key is to recognize when they are genuinely presented to me in an honest, trustworthy way, not when somebody has counterfeited a scarcity that doesn't really exist there, or lies with statistics to tell me that their product or service is the fastest growing or the largest selling. That's the thing I have to watch out for to make me decide whether or not to move in the direction of that requester.
Anna has an observation. She says principle number 7, unity, indicates professional associations should be growing, or at least finding growth by offering more to their members.
Yes, and what the principle suggests is the thing they can offer that's most central to the idea of identity is belongingness, being a part of something meaningful that you find fits with your preferred way of thinking about yourself. That's the secret ingredient.
I was thinking about this since we got ready to do this interview with you, and that's, while I can't argue that we react to authority, 2020 was surely a year to think about how we've started to react to authority. There's been a lot of shifts in people's action and reaction. And I have zero political conversation intended here, but what I do intend is, as a researcher, as a scientist, how did authority change in your perspective, or did it even, based on what's happened in the last year-ish?
It did, because of the internet. It's now the case that the authority on choosing the best hotel or city to go to used to be a travel writer, right? Some expert on travel. It used to be that the authority on telling us where was the best restaurant for us, or used to be a critic, a food critic in our local newspaper. It's not anymore. It's who we are comparable to, similar to, people like us who have given this experience a star rating. Those are the authorities now.
So can we stack it? So it's unity plus authority in that case, because we feel that we're with this kind of group who said this about that experience. Is that how we do that?
Exactly. So, for example, there are websites now, commercial sites, EE marketing sites, that tell people, tell us who you are, and we'll give you the star rating of people who have those characteristics. Right? And then you get unity plus what we call social proof, what the majority of other people like you are doing in that situation, right? Here's an example of that. There was a study done in McDonald's restaurants in South America, in Colombia and Brazil. And the question was, how do you get more people to buy a dessert, right, after they make their order for the usual hamburger and fries or whatever it is, right? And it turned out that if the server says, would you like a dessert? The McFlurry is the favorite for the customers here in this location. McFlurry purchases went up 55%.
Wow. I mean, you wouldn't even have to convince me. I will take that.
That's interesting, though.
Well, yeah, because they're thinking they've got a lot in common with the people who frequent that location.
Yeah, these are
therefore
the people...
they probably also like it.
Right.
So Nancy Harhut also knows a lot about influence. Yeah. I'm sorry to like Mike you there. She says, so the principle of liking means we're more persuaded by people we like and admire, she's asking. And the unity principle means we're more persuaded by people who are like us and part of our group.
Yes. And the liking principle also includes similarity. That is, we like people who have similar tastes or preferences or styles, right? That kind of similarity. Unity is about similarity of membership. Common membership in a group, and in the new book we call them the we groups, the groups that when we refer to them, we say those, we use the term we to describe the people with us in that group. That's about shared identities, like Green Bay Packer fan, or, I'm a student here, too. Not I like Korean food. No, I'm of you. That's the difference.
Or you say, I'm a Whovian, I'm a Doctor Who fan, because then everybody will be like,
right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The secret language matters in that case. Mitch Jackson had asked the question, has influence or the approach towards building influence changed because of COVID? Are there different kinds of ways you need to ask a question at a distance, perhaps?
Well, yeah, of course, once again, because we're distant from people, we use the internet. And very often the internet is the most bloodless communication channel we've ever developed, because we often don't see people. We just see in an email, some letters on a screen, and so on. There was a study done of negotiators. Now, here's the thing about negotiation. It's being done over the internet now. You're not really interacting with people. And it used to be there was something that a negotiator could do to significantly increase the likelihood of cooperation from the other interviewer. And it was to shake hands at the beginning of the interaction. If they did, they got more cooperation from that person because it was a signal of an intent to cooperate. Right? And one of the principles of influence is what we call reciprocity. People give back to us what we have first given to them. If we start out with a gesture of an intent to cooperate, we get cooperation in return. So anyway, in this study, the negotiators were bargaining over email, and on this set of problems that they were bargaining on, it was a difficult set of problems. In 30% of the cases, they had stymied negotiation, just deadlocks. Both sides just walked away with nothing. No mutually agreeable deal where both would benefit. Unless the researchers asked them before the negotiation began to send some information back to and forth to one another about who they were. Right? Give us some information about you. Right. All right. Now, after they did that, negotiations that were stymied dropped from 30% to 6%.
Wow. That's a pretty significant number.
Yeah. And what the researchers did was to say, oh, it must be that they humanized one another. You know, they got information instead of just some cipher on the other end of the cyberspace typing in a proposal. It's a real person there. No, it turns out if you look deeply into the research, it was where there were commonalities of membership. People would say, oh, you're a runner? I'm a runner. Oh, you're an only child? Me too, right? Those are the things that people use to sort of define themselves, right? That was the thing where those commonalities were revealed. You got the drop in stymied negotiations. People were willing to give one another grace.
It's hard to demonize people when you see them as people.
As people who are
like you.
Like me. Of me.
Of me.
Kat had a point. As a new sewer, nice try. I pushed that button. I'll only buy PDF patterns from small businesses that have an active community that I can join. If they don't have that, I don't even look at what they're selling.
Wow, that's great. Great point. Great example.
And Ann says, on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin Badgers.
Go the Badgers. Let's see. We covered Kate. We covered, Ann had a comment that we did not grab, just the Unity one about belonging, being part of something meaningful. Just a general thank you to that. We have to read a couple ads. So I'm going to put you backstage for a couple whole minutes. Grab a glass of water. Who knows? We'll come right back.
No, don't go away.
Don't go anyway.
Okay.
Nobody go away.
Yeah. Don't forget, we always have some crypto to give you these days. So we're going to work on that. We've got the new backpack.
I'm going to tell you the secret password.
Well, why don't we do that right now? We'll just get that out of the way. If you got to go to rally.io to make an account if you don't already have an account. But once you get an account, you just email carrie@chrisbrogan.com and you let her know that you want to get involved with
that you want me to send you some backpack coins.
And she's got the password of the day, which is
yes.
Because of Dr. Cialdini, the password is yes. So go to rally.io, set up an account, give us what your account name is. We'll send you some coins just because you were here hanging out with us. Isn't that kind of fun?
Yeah, don't forget to give us your Rally ID.
Yeah, so we don't know that. We do a lot of funny guesses. Most of them are wrong. We are sponsored through Rallycoin, by the way, through the backpack coin itself.
That's so cool.
We are by presearch.com. And presearch.com is a new type of search engine. It is a search engine where your privacy is important. You don't have to give everything away to the mothership of Google. You can earn crypto rewards using this search engine. And it also allows you to lock and load a whole variety of different search tools. You don't just have to use like their version of the engine. Presearch.com. Give this thing a check out. I've been really, you know, really using it.
It's legit because Chris found himself in there.
Found myself, so I'm okay. It's
a legitimate. Certain.
You want Unity? I am me. All right. You want to make a show like this? You totally can. You go to cbrogan.me/StreamYard and you can get a video show. Might be hard to lure in legendary godfather of influence, Dr. Robert Cialdini, but
bring your own dad jokes.
cbrogan.me/StreamYard. Hey, you don't like our faces? Castos.com sponsors our podcast. You can go anywhere you can hear a podcast.
There are many reasons somebody might listen to an audio podcast instead of watching video. That maybe has nothing to do with not liking
riding
your
lawnmower
face.
User, and you've got to like keep your eye on the.
Either at
grass.
The gym or something. Dang, Castos.com.
Right. You can look at our faces at the gym. They have Wi-Fi. Listen, do you want a dot online domain? I bet influence.online is sitting there waiting. cbrogan.me/online. Use the code Chris in all caps and you get $1 domains. That's crazy.
Why didn't they make it not case sensitive? I don't know.
I don't know.
Because so Liz says she loves this. Chris Voss wrote in his book about negotiation and in his masterclass and agreed that making a connection, listening is important. You at least got to pretend you're listening. That's the secret to like a good marriage, right? If you can laugh at the right time without listening, that's like extra points.
All right. Family, occupation, recreation, and money. Great commonalities for conversations. Oh,
that's
very true.
A lot of people are very comfortable talking about those things. That's absolutely true. I like to warm people up with some of that. Maybe we need to have digital pre-events before important meetings, negotiations, and meetings. That's interesting.
Oh, and Jane says, I got my coins.
Because we had a password yesterday, too.
That we did. Yep. We like sending out some coins. Look, these coins are going down and down and down in value right now because Rally itself is, and so is Bitcoin. And
but we everything. Just want to give you some. It's not going to cost you anything. It's a free account.
So. My point, they go down in value.
Even did I interrupt your point?
You put your real human dollars in there right now. You know, I can never predict anything. It's crypto. Like it can go down further. But if they go back up, my gosh, you're going to be sitting pretty right now. because it's a really temporary dip.
And you can use them
dip.
For stuff. Like you can use them for our backstage experience. So you can come hang out.
You just give us 10 coins. You could have been asking Dr. Cialdini questions before we even showed up, kids.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. We were. You were.
We were. Hey, let me ask you questions about why my business is failing.
You pushed your mouth.
Let's grab him.
He's very gracious about answering all of your very specific questions.
So we're back with Dr. Cialdini. We've already hit on the fact that you launched a seventh one. We've got Unity. We've asked a lot of questions about Unity. Back to the original six, the Gang of Six, as some might have called them. Is it very likely that we lean on some of the principles more than others? Are there some of us who like push a lot on reciprocity or social proof versus somebody kind of working harder on liking and consistency? Or is that not a thing?
No, that is a thing. Some people have favorites that they rely on. And, there was a colleague of mine, marketing professor, who decided he was going to try to find the single most effective influence approach, right? And so he spent a couple of years in the process, and I had lost touch with him, but I saw him at a conference, and he grabbed me by the elbow. He said, Bob, I found it. I found the single most effective influence approach. It is not to have a single influence approach.
Well, that's cheating. Come on.
Yeah. No, that's a fool's game to think that the same one is going to be effective for all situations and all audiences and all your various possible histories with that audience and relationships with it. No, you change the influence approach based on the situation. And for me, that is to point to the one that's in there already, or the ones that are in there. If you have genuine scarcity, the time is ticking, or there are only a few of these left, or whatever, you point to that, and that's going to work. If it's authority, and you have genuine expert testimonials and voices speaking in your behalf or consistent with your idea, you point to that. If you've got social proof, a lot of people are moving in your direction, point to that. Oh, and by the way, on that one, we've got new research that shows that if there's a new form of social proof, right, that has to do with trends in your direction, right? It's not, so you, if you say we have 30% of the market, right? Our market share, we have 30% market share, right? That's a statistic, 30%. If you say 2 years ago, we had 20%, or, now that's a difference. But if you say 2 years ago, we had 20%, last year we had 25, this year we have 30%, you know what people are going to project? Next year, it's going to be 40%. And the year after that, 50%. You suddenly have something that we're calling future social proof in people's minds, moving them. So if you're a startup or you have a new product or service or idea, there's not a lot of popularity you can point to at this particular juncture. If it's a good idea, you will have growth, though. Point to the growth. That's more effective than even a larger market share at a particular point, because people are going to project beyond that.
Like they give you credit in advance.
That's
for
right.
Your future success.
That's right.
Anne thinks that Backpack Backstage sounds like Mitch's suggestion for pre-meeting meetings. No, you know what? It is insanely fun. We have some of the best times before and after the show. We have conversations that are like, they're
sometimes
ridiculous.
You miss the best part of the show. I apologize in advance, but that's how it goes.
Yeah, somebody gets really chatty. Like,
by the way, that's the principle of scarcity. I'm just going to keep labeling them as I go.
Yeah, that's true, the principle.
We invited one person back specifically because of what they said in the after that nobody else got to hear. And we're like, everyone needs to hear this.
Yes, people want to hear. People want more of what they can't have, right?
Very true.
Yeah, and so that's how scarcity works. And there was a study of 6,700 commercial websites, right? That sold various kinds of products or services and so on. And the researchers looked at what features of them were most likely to lead to conversions from prospects to customers. And they found 29 separate features, things like, do you have a search function on your site? That technological addition. Do you offer free delivery? That financial reason. Did you include a call to action at the end of your presentation? These kinds of things. The things that work best were the six principles of influence that I had originally talked about. And the one at the top was scarcity.
Wow.
Scarcity of limited number, right? So that only so many more available at this price or with this feature or with this payment plan associated or whatever it was, it made people crazy.
I believe it was you. I always hate that feeling of like, I'm going to quote you and I'm totally quoting the wrong person or something. The password in is yes. People don't react as much to, boy, there's a raise coming, but they sure react to, you stand the risk of losing some of your money if we don't make this change. I feel like that's one that I got.
That is, well, it's me as I'm channeling Nobel Prize winner Daniel Kahneman, who won Prize based on his prospect theory. People are more motivated into action by the prospects of losing something to avoiding that than gaining that very same thing. So there was a study done, for example, in California where researchers went door to door offering people an energy audit for their home. They would go through and check all the insulation and weather stripping. And half of them were told, if you will insulate your home fully, you'll be able to gain $1 a day every day, right? The other half were told, if you fail to insulate your home fully, you'll lose $1 a day every day. It's the same dollar, but 150% more people insulated under loss language, right? So you're exactly right, Chris, that I do talk about being sure that you don't just tell people what they're going to gain. You also tell them honestly what benefits and advantages they will forego if they don't move in the direction you're recommending for them.
Mm. Like when you unsubscribe to something and they have all the pop-ups. Wait, are you sure? We have this thing.
Yes.
I don't know if you know.
Yeah.
Nancy makes another observation. We follow what others do, social proof, but we also are motivated by scarcity, obtaining something not everyone can get. They seem to conflict, but they both persuade, yes?
Yes, they do. That's really a bullseye observation. These things work independently of one another. You can move in the direction of something because there's a lot of people moving that direction. The way you put them together is something that this company called Booking.com did, right? Booking.com is this, make reservations. You can get reservations for hotel rooms or flights, various kinds of vacations of one sort or another. It's a Dutch company. And they started out trying to use various strategies to get people to book a room in a hotel. And what they would do is show them the number when you're on their site and you, let's say, click down to a particular hotel and a particular type of room, they would say only 3 rooms left. Honestly, they would say this, only 3 rooms of this type left at this price. And then they would say, honestly, 6 other people are looking at this site right now. So Now you get a lot of other people and scarcity. Here's what happened. When they put that into place, the marketing unit, the customer service department sent a message to the technology folks in the company saying, there's something wrong with the system, because we're getting so many purchases of rooms, more in the last 2 hours than we've had in 2 weeks. There's a glitch in the system. No, it wasn't a glitch in the system. It wasn't a problem with the technology. It was the power of scarcity plus competition, because exactly what we were talking about. It's the combination of scarcity and social proof at the same time.
It's like watching the cars circle the spots at the mall.
Oh my gosh. So you put out the new version of the book, and at the same time, you've pumped up a bunch of things at the website. You have new courses, new offerings, something like that. What's going on over at Influence at Work right now? What are people able to pick up now that they weren't able to get before? You have some new things there.
Yes, we do. We've always had a workshop called the Principles of Persuasion Workshop that we offer training to people to be more effective and ethical in the way that they move people toward them. But we now have an on-demand online version of that program. People can come in from anywhere at any time, any place, and become part of that training procedure that we've got, where we show people how scientifically we can inform them about how best to get people to move in their direction and to do so ethically.
And then, just in case people didn't know this too, you can also train to be a Cialdini trainer. So don't forget, you can swing by and pick up that. I mean, you have a little bit of extra time. We're still locked down for a few more months or more.
So yes.
We're going to be doing that.
Yeah.
We had a question about where do we send the password, and Kate answered it, but let me just go through the steps just in case you missed it. So you have to have a rally.io account. They're free to get. They don't ask you too many weird questions. So you have to send us your Rally account name so we can send you the coins. There we go. Kate asked the question. This is interesting. How are bots affecting influence and scarcity from what you've been researching, especially things like chatbots? Any research in that angle?
Well, what I know about is bots that give you information that's been programmed into them rather than genuine information. For example, on websites with star ratings, you'll get various kinds of phony submissions. So they give you certain number of stars, you know, and they're not real. They're just somebody. It's a bot or some person who's been programmed to just give it a 5-star rating. And what we've done to try to deal with that is, it turns out, the highest, the most effective star rating for a product or service online is not 5 stars. It's a range between 4.2 and 4.7. If you're below 4.2, people think, that might not be such a great offer. If you're above 4.7, they say, something's fishy here, right? So it turns out you actually shouldn't be afraid of getting some 2 or 3-star reviews. They bring you into that sweet spot where people are most confident that this is a good product or service.
Well, you're saving Chris's bacon, because when he reviewed my hobby podcast, he gave me this glowing write-up but said 4 stars. And I was like, screw you, Brogan. And he said, well, it's not going to be very convincing if they're all 5 stars. And I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, we had learned a similar thing when we wrote the book Trust Agents, which we're like the opposite of you as a writer. Like we have no researchers. We just write things down and people go, okay. So we had read somewhere that if you see only, there was a survey somewhere that said, if you saw only 5-star reviews, 70% of people could somehow say something must be wrong here. Yeah. But they couldn't figure out what, and that's what we quoted. Yep. So there was a question from the audience. How is frequency bias affecting influence?
Well, frequency bias in the sense that the more that something that is familiar to you, the more times you've seen it or have encountered it, the more times you've heard a particular claim, the more you believe it. And this is worrisome to me because it says that those individuals who have the biggest wallets, those people who can send their message most often, are the ones who are going to get people to believe it just because of the frequency with which they've encountered it.
Just pummeling them into believing it.
Well, giving them a sense that, oh, this is familiar to me. What one of the things that we found is that if people find something as familiar, not boring, but familiar, their guard goes down, you know, oh yeah, I've seen this before. This isn't something to be worried about, something that I have to protect myself against. I've seen it many times and it hasn't harmed me. So they allow it in to a greater extent.
Which is where your science goes. I'm sorry.
Why is story? Sorry, can I ask?
I'm sorry, Karen.
Why is story so persuasive?
I'm a great supporter of narrative and story as a way to move people in a direction that you hope will be beneficial for them, even though they might be reluctant or hanging back or sitting on the fence, or, you know, just not willing to move in a particular direction, especially critical people who are skeptical of everything, you know. Here's what story does to defeat that kind of blanket skepticism. You can't counter argue a story. You can counter argue a claim. You can counter argue a proposition. You can counter argue an assertion. You can't counter argue a story. It exists, unless you were to say, oh, the person telling
You're
us
lying.
That is a liar. Yeah. No, unless it's that. You have to take it in. It's just narrative. And by the way, we learn by narrative. Here's a mistake that especially scientists make when they make presentations to people, right? Too much of what they present is bullet points. As we never evolved to take advantage of bullet points or to learn from bullets. We learned from stories that were told over campfires about where the best hunting grounds were and so on. That's how we evolved. And so we'd be remiss if we didn't include vibrant, engaging stories that fit with the evidence we already know comes from a scientific analysis.
And or that maybe can reassert our unity, sneak a few couple more in there and we'll be cooking with gas. Well, we've come to the last few parts of our show. So here's one.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
So, our person of the day, it's a mix. I want to give it to, I was going to give it to, but I think we're going to go here because I think that frequency bias question was great. It really sparked a good conversation going forward. I think that's a good use. I also was thinking when you talked about the fact when we see it so often. Oh, did I push that? I didn't push that, did I? When you see it so often, you react to it in a different way. McDonald's spent $100 million on their McCafe knowing that they were going to get $1 billion in bounce from it, and they did. So that's why.
Remember the old cigarette ads that were like, doctors smoke this brand of cigarettes. Cigarettes are actually good for you.
Right.
In the absence of any counterintelligence coming out.
So yeah. The last thing we have to do on our show is the same question we've asked everybody from Sir Mix-a-Lot to a bunch of nuns. This question,
one nun.
She's like a bunch. What goes in your backpack? It's either something physical or metaphorical. Carrie, what's a great example of something physical that could go in a backpack?
Extra set of teeth.
An extra set of teeth.
It's an actual answer, by the way.
This guy, they really like pro wrestling. So that's our only guess on why he said that. And then
we get to ask him when he comes back. We'll ask him.
That's true. He comes back in a couple of weeks. Is there a good metaphorical one you can think of?
That I would carry around with me for
So for you, it could be either physical or metaphorical. But I was asking Carrie, what's an example? So Dr. Cialdini, I'm stalling for you.
Maybe kindness.
Oh, kindness, of course.
Yeah. That's a good one. Well, here's mine would be something that's similar to that. A generous spirit.
I like it.
Here's what generosity does for you. And I say that if you ever go into a situation where you don't know people, it's a new situation, think the best of them. Expect the best of them and from them, because it allows you to be generous with them. And by the rule for reciprocation, one of the principles of influence, they will be generous with you. Secondly, they will like you for being generous with them, right? And now you've got people working together, exchanging, who like each other. What's a better interpersonal situation than that one?
Kate loves it.
I'm a scientist and I hate how scientists present information. You're so correct. There you go.
Another Alan Alda has a great book on that. Alan Alda wrote a book called If I Understood You, Would I Have This Look on My Face? And he's got a lot of information in there about his work with scientists specifically. Yeah. So maybe check that out too. And definitely, of course, check out this book on influence and persuasion.
Absolutely. You've got to grab the new version of the book. Even if you looked at the old version of the book, there's all kinds. It's like Pluto's back. Everything's different. It's very different. I was thinking about influence a lot before the show because I always think of my grandmother as very influential. My grandmother didn't know the laws. She hadn't learned this at all. She had two little fingers. And I will tell you, there was some damage she could do with those. Let me tell you how I learned about influence.